200 pages and not a word about deficiencies in Part 91. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest, as is always the case on Monday, or almost always, is Bob Miller, certified flight instructor in the Buffalo, New York area, also the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob, first, before we get into today's topic, which is going to be a particularly interesting one, tell me how your current flight school is going at the Lancaster Buffalo Airport.
Well, it's suffering the wintertime doldrums right now. We've had perhaps the roughest December and January in recent memory. Not only lots of snow, which in and of itself is not a problem, but we've had lots of freezing fog, low clouds. We just can't get airplanes launched. So short answer, it's we're struggling through these hard couple of months in anticipation of a great resurgence of interest starting in February and March.
Well, it sounds like a great time to be doing a ground school.
Yeah, right. That's right. And one thing, Paul, happy birthday to you, sir.
Oh, well, thank you, Bob. Thank you. As we've discussed, seeing those numbers click by beats the alternative.
Yes, it does.
Let's talk about primary training. It kind of segues right in. Tuesday of last week, the FAA released a 200-page-plus call to action on airline safety and pilot training. And the document is the culmination of a half-year's work by the FAA, the NTSB, and the DOT that was spurred on kind of by the Colgan air crash that happened right in your neighborhood last year. It's coming up on the first anniversary. You have had the chance to read this online in its entirety, and it brought out, I guess, an argument that you've been trying to make for some time.
Yeah, what's so profound about this report is its notable omission to any reference to Part 91 operations. The complete omission of an assessment of the responsibility of general aviation, primarily flight schools and flight instruction, because this is where that terrible error in that cockpit of 3407 took place. It was a direct result of the crew's failure to both prevent and correct from an aerodynamic stall. And one of the things that we know about instruction and learning is that this notion of primacy of learning, that which we learn first lasts longest. And my thesis in this is we have some culpability in the general aviation arena. We're the ones that train the pilots that go on, many of them, to corporate flying jobs, airline jobs. And stall spin prevention is such a elementary component of primary training, why two crew members managed to get to the airlines and suffer such a complete omission of skill. I think this is one of the weaknesses of the report that you just mentioned. It just totally it seems to ignore any responsibility of general aviation in the preparation of airline pilots today.
Well, now, you liken this to something else that was, you know, a hot topic years ago, the whole analogy of why can't Johnny read. You compare this to kids getting pushed along through grade after grade without having the requisite reading skills to the point where they wind up in high school or in some cases college freshmen and are not prepared to do the work.
Yes, the parallel, the comparison is strikingly similar. When Johnny can't read, Johnny gets pushed out of grade 3, 5, 7, 9, out of high school, and as you say, occasionally into college, and then we discover that the individual doesn't have basic reading skills. If that's the case, do we focus our attention on the college for Johnny's inability to read, or do we at least look back and ask ourselves, how did Johnny get out of high school? How did Johnny get out of middle school? At least it is owed an examination, a look-see back at that level. And that's what's missing out of the report that has just been released.
Okay. I have a series of devil's advocate questions to ask you about that. One, I guess the first one would be, if that's what's really happening, why are not the airlines cognizant of this and building it into their training and simulator programs?
Well, you know, when you go to college, to continue the analogy we were using before, the colleges fully expect that their students are arriving ready to learn at the collegiate level. And in airline operation, certainly in regional airline operation, that is the case. That's the case in, I would say, 99% of the case of the pilots coming to that level. They do know how to do this, but there are some that do not. And I'm not saying that all pilots that are leaving flight schools are dangerously derelict in their ability to prevent and recover from a stall. By no means am I saying that. But there are some. And we have to ask ourselves, how are these folks getting through? You know, we look at one terrible airline crash that involved a stall accident and say, well, they, you know, that perhaps that's an aberration. It just doesn't happen very often. But if we look at our own general aviation data, we see that we suffer one fatal stall spin accident a week in the United States. That's 50 a year. 50 out of little over 300 fatal accidents that occur in every year. That's 1/6 of all accidents are caused by stalls. And I judge to say many more are caused by stalls, but they're not recorded as such. For example, icing accidents. Very often, the ultimate undoing of the aircraft was a stall related to contamination on the wing. That goes down as an icing accident, not a stall accident. So there's likely many, many more. And then if you go and discuss stalls with DPEs, with the FAA itself, we'll ask them, you know, what level of stall training should we be providing at the primary level? There's a lot of debate on this. Many think that we should take a student through just the first sound of the stall horn and then have the student recover. Others think that just as soon as we get a little burble in the controls, we should recover. I'm of the opinion that that airplane should be taken through a complete full stall break. Allow the student to develop the feelings, the senses of what this feels like. And when they do this, they have a built-in innate ability to recognize then a stall as it may be developing. I think this is what was missing in the tragic flight of 3407. Those two flight crew members, even though they were fatigued, yes, even though there may have been poor hiring practices at the regionals, yes, these are factors. But the ultimate undoing of that aircraft was the inability to prevent a stall. And that's as rudimentary as getting to college and not being able to read, in my opinion.
Bob, we need to take a break. More in a moment with Bob Miller. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about the FAA's 200-page report on the issues facing the airlines, which makes no mention of the deficiencies in primary flight training that Bob feels were to blame for the crash of Continental Connections 3407 in Buffalo a year ago. The FAA may think it's not worth the time. I don't say that flippantly. I say that when you're in the position of a Randy Babbitt, you have a lot of fires to put out at any given time. And frankly, Part 91 might not be the biggest priority. Obviously, in this case, if what you're saying is true, it affects operations considerably beyond that. Where should this be fixed? Because if you're right, I dare to say that many pilots who have come into the regional airlines in the past few years, since a stall was no longer, you know, in vogue to be demonstrated during check rides, for example, may have this deficiency, and where do we fix it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not saying that I have an easy answer for this. I'm just saying that attention, light needs to be focused at the general aviation level. Somebody needs to be convening a panel of general aviation folks and saying, listen, what are we doing in terms of preparing the private pilot for stall training? You know, once we leave the private pilot rating, we go on to instruments. We're not talking about stalls there. We do have a stall component in the commercial PTS, but the emphasis there are on the other commercial maneuvers. So it's quite possible that if a student doesn't acquire stall recognition training at the primary level, he or she may not ever see it again, ever. And the airlines, in their defense, they'll often say, well, we shouldn't have to subject our pilots to stall training because they have no business getting into a stall in the first place. So why teach something how to recover from something that they have no business getting into? I think these are all red herrings, Paul. I think this is fair game for FAA, NTSB oversight to come into the primary training level. Let's look at Part 61. Let's look at the PTS, and let's define what, in fact, stall training is and how far through the stall a student should be taken before he's sent up to the examiner for check ride. Right now, it is unclear.
Well, Bob, we have a bunch of pilots at all different levels of training and proficiency who listen to this each week. Let's throw it open to email Paul P, P-A-U-L-P, at aero-news.net if you have any comments on this. Maybe we'll have something to take up on this topic in a future edition of this podcast. And, Bob, as always, we appreciate your thought-provoking perspectives, and we will talk to you again on Monday.
Thanks, Paul. Talk to you.
You can always find the latest available edition of Bob's newsletter and a link to Bob Miller Flight Training at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.